Vayehi mikets shenatayim yamim ufaro choleim vihine omed al hayor. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is really for Chanukah. Yes, this Shabbat is Parshat Miketz. I don't know how much Miketz we'll get to, except maybe peripherally to Chanukah. The recording and first broadcast is on the first day of Chanukah, December 2nd, according to the secular calendar. Happy birthday, daughter Miri. And it is not only her birthday, but it's the anniversary of my becoming a father. So that's a mutual special date. It was also my father, Zichrono Livracha, his birthday, December 2nd. On the Jewish calendar, the 25th of Kislev, 5771. And as I've already said, last night was the first candle, and today is the first day of Chanukah, and the show will mostly be about Chanukah. In fact, you've already heard a little piece of Mo'oz Tzur, the traditional Chanukah song. All the others follow it, but it's the one that people most associate with Chanukah, and we'll be playing one stanza of Mo'oz Tzur, specifically Yevanim Nikbitzu Alai, to a new tune by the Yeshiva Boys Choir. YBC5 is the album, and the track is Yevanim New. In the meantime, let us begin with Psalm 121, as is my custom. I read Psalm 130, Kuf Lamed, when it's a regular day, but when it's a day without Tachanun, and certainly a day with Hallel, we say Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph. Psalm 121. Shir lama'alot, esa einai el heharim, me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai, osei shamayim va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum velo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yaminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmarcha mikol ra yishmaret nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha, me'ata v'ad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela la'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. So you know what? Let's start with the YBC 5 album, the track Yevanim, a new bitsua of that, and let's first go over that particular stanza of Mo'oz Tzur, and even before that, let's give an overview of Mo'oz Tzur. Mo'oz Tzur, composed sometime in the 13th century of the Common Era, is sort of a composite of troubles that had befallen the Jewish people and the salvations therefrom. The first stanza, which the beginning of which is also the refrain, is about the rededication of the Beit HaMikdash, of the Holy Temple. But the next four stanzas deal with the Egyptian slavery and our redemption therefrom, with the Babylonian exile, with the Purim story, and then with the Hanukkah story. That's this stanza, Yevanim Nikbitzu Alai. Then the Greeks gathered against me in the days of the Hasmoneans. They broke down the walls of my towers and defiled all the oils. But from the last remaining flask, a miracle was wrought for your beloved. Therefore the sages ordained these 8 days for song and praise. There is a sixth stanza, which does not seem to be part of the original, but it was added, and perhaps it got censored out sometime in the Middle Ages, and then got put back, because it talks about the hour of deliverance from our current exile, and the long-awaited Geula Shelema. In any event, we're focusing on the stanza that deals with Chanukah, and after the song I want to talk about the last line, which is probably not even part of the song, B'nei Vina Yemei Shmona Kav'u Shir Urananim. But in the meantime, enjoy Yeshiva Boys Choir, YBC 5, Yevanim.
Daddy!
Yeshiva Boys Choir. I mentioned earlier that I wanted to talk about the last line in that Yevonim stanza, which is Bnei Vina, men of deep understanding. Yemei Shmona, 8 days, Kavu Shir Urananim. They declared, decreed, fixed that we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days. Men of deep understanding. Now, if you remember the, what I call the kindergarten version of the Hanukkah story, without the complications, there was a revolt against the Greeks. They were defeated. The Hasmoneans, the Maccabees, the Jews had a victory. And that was followed by purifying of the Beit HaMikdash, cleaning it up. And their concern was to light the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash, but there was no oil. Finally, they found 1 day supply of oil. And for lack of finding more, they lit it. And it miraculously lasted for 8 days, until a new supply of oil was available. Therefore, we have an 8-day Hanukkah festival. First of all, there is no rule in the making of post-biblical holidays that there be a correspondence between the number of days of the holiday and part of the story. The fact that they had an 8-day miracle or 8 days of miracle does not necessarily result in our sages decreeing a festival of 8 days. They could easily have decreed a single day like they did with Purim, and on that day we would light, let's say, 8 candles to commemorate the miracle of the oil, and that would be it. There is no automatic rule that it has to correspond to the number of days within the story, and that's what produces the festival. Second, which we're not going to get into now, and maybe next week we'll have some fun with it, there is this classic question that has been circulated for hundreds of years. There are whole books written about this question and their attempted answers on the part of dozens and dozens and dozens of people. The question is, if you follow the story, there's a 1 day supply of oil that lasts 8 days. Do the arithmetic. It means for 7 days there was the miraculous event of the lights of the menorah, which should have gone out, continue to burn for an additional 7 days. That's 7 days of miracle. Where do we get 8 from? And there, as I said, are dozens of answers. We'll talk about them next week. I want to combine that question of why 8 days with the fact that the song of Ma'oz Tzur refers to those who decreed the eighth day holiday, as Bnei Vina, men of deep understanding. Because of that description of the men who decided that we have an 8-day festival, I am convinced that there is more to that number 8 than just the, let's call it, coincidence that that's how many days the miracle continued. To strengthen my search for something more is the simple fact that 8 days was a practical, necessary period of time for new oil. And there are different opinions that are given. It took time to travel, to press the oil, to bring it back, or to count out a period of purifying, or whatever. But it seems kind of flimsy that just because there was a practical need Just know that I'm going to change my tune when we talk about the 8 days from the perspective of the miracle of the oil. But that's next week. If we're talking now, I'm starting by rattling the tree a little bit and saying there has to be more than just the practical consideration of how long it would take to get new oil, the fact that they found a one-day supply and that it lasted a total of 8 days. It's too arbitrary. They could have found a two-day supply and gotten fresh oil in 5 days. Or if it took a month, what does that mean? Here's what I think. And I'm not the one that's making this up. It is brought down in these books that deal with this question of why eight. But the why eight is mostly answered in focus of why not only seven, why eight? I'm looking at it from the perspective of why eight altogether. And I believe the answer lies in Brit Milah, the mitzvah of circumcision. The mitzvah of circumcision was one of the mitzvot, one of the practices of Judaism that was singled out by the Greek oppressors to stop us from doing Brit Milah. They tried to stop us from other things as well, but one of their main focuses was on Brit Milah, because Brit Milah is not just a mitzvah that's performed. It is a sign of a covenant between the Jewish people and God. It is a sign of the uniqueness of the Jewish people, their difference from other nations of the world, and that rankled the Greeks. The Greeks did not originally intend to kill the Jews, only to assimilate them, to Hellenize them and to assimilate them. And Brit Milah was a cause celebre of that barrier which they chose to tear down. Interesting, and I'm just adding this thought now, if the sedras that we read around Hanukkah time are the ones that deal with Yosef and his brothers, we need go back one more week to the episode of the abduction and rape of Dinah, and the fact that Shimon and Levi approached Hamor and his son Shechem and basically conned them into circumcision. But circumcision there was spoken of as that which marks the difference between the Jewish people and other nations. And the goal of Hamor and Shechem was to assimilate. Our sons will take your daughters in marriage, and we will give over our daughters to your sons, and we will live together, and we will flourish together, and we will melt and blend into a single unity. Brit Milah symbolizes the distinctiveness of the Jewish people. And that was a main target of the Greeks. Furthermore, Brit Milah, from the Greek perspective, is a mutilation of the beautiful body. If God, or the gods, or however they put it, created the human body, it was perfect. And the Jewish practice of cutting off the foreskin is a mutilation of the body, and they would have nothing of it. The Jewish position is, this is not a mutilation of the body, this is what God wants us to do. He created the male body with an extra flap of skin called the foreskin, and it was intended by divine decree and mitzvah to be removed in the ceremony of Brit Milah. That brings the Jewish people Me'al Lateva, above and beyond nature. Greek was all about nature. Art and beauty and sport, the natural world. the Jews were saying there is something beyond the 7 days of nature. There is an eighth day. The eighth day of Mila. Comes the sages who fixed a commemoration of the Jewish victory over the forces of assimilation, over the Greeks, over Hellenism. And they said, this holiday, which we are going to create to commemorate that victory, shall have that symbolic number of days, 8 days. Not only will it have 8 days, but later on, instead of lighting a candle per night for 8 days, the custom developed to mark the number of days by the number of candles you light. Beit Shammai's opinion, which we don't follow, was to light 8 candles the first night, then 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, each night being different, and he went in diminishing numbers for certain reasons. Its correspondence to the sacrifices, specifically the bulls, within the Musaf sacrifice of the 8 days, the 7 days of Sukkot, and a conceptual idea of fire burning out the evil and then eventually ending up as a single bright light that carries the word of Torah. Hillel, Beit Hillel, had his reasons, which obviously appealed to those who made the decision of codifying this law, because the halakha, the law, is like Beit Hillel, that we light 1 the first night, 2 the second, 3 the third, up to 8 the eighth night. That means that it's not only the eighth day that symbolizes Brit Milah, it's the whole 8 day period. Because tonight we light 2 candles out of 8. You look at your Chanukiah, sometimes called the Chanukah menorah, which is almost a misnomer. Chanukiah is the correct term. And you see 8 holders for 8 candles, flames, fires. And tonight is 2. Tomorrow will be 3 for Shabbat, before Shabbat. Motzoi Shabbat after Shabbat will be 4, etc., until we have 8. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Miketz, Shabbat Chanukah. You are listening to the Chanukah issue of Torah Tidbits audio. We were in the middle of a thought, really towards the end. Here's the rest. Then we will have another track from the YBC 5 album, and then we'll talk about other aspects of Chanukah. So the theme of 8 has a convenient match to the time it would have taken to bring a fresh supply of oil, but the message of 8 is very, very clear. We even call the basic requirements of human behavior, which in Jewish concept is known as Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the 7 Noahide laws. And there it is again. 7, because it's natural. Thou shalt not kill or murder is a natural law. Every culture in the world is supposed to understand that that's something that you have to insist on, that people don't kill each other or steal from each other. Avraham Avinu was the one to receive the 8th mitzvah, the one that is not logical, not obvious, not natural, the one that brings us beyond nature, me'al lateva, above nature. And that's the significance of Mila, and that's the significance, I believe, or at least part of the significance, of 8 days of Chanukah. We'll be right back. So many topics I'd like to discuss, but let's start with the song we just heard, which was Shehecheyanu. It is the third blessing of the first night of Chanukah. Each night of Chanukah, when we light candles, we say a bracha for the mitzvah of lighting candles, which ends, Asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav, God who has sanctified us with his mitzvot, v'tzivanu, and commanded us Lahadlik, to light Ner Chanukah, the Chanukah candle. Let's digress immediately for something before we get to Shehecheyanu. Listen again to the blessing. Blessed are you, God, our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his mitzvot, so far so good, we say that bracha a lot, and commanded us to light the Chanukah candle. Strange. Where did God command us to light the Chanukah candle? In fact, Chanukah candles and Chanukah itself is a post-biblical holiday which is recognized as a mitzvah d'rabbanan, a rabbinic command, and not a d'oraita, a Torah command. So when we sit down at the Seder table to eat matzah, we are clearly and obviously justified in saying, God who has sanctified us with his mitzvot and commanded us on the eating of matzah. Nobody questions that. And the same thing with sukkah, and the same thing with shofar, and the same thing with shechita and brit milah and putting up a mezuzah and putting on tefillin and wearing a talis. All of those are Torah commands, and they justify the expression in the blessing, Vitzivanu, and God has commanded us to do such and such. Where do we get that justification for Chanukah? Add to the question before we give it an answer. There are five other mitzvot besides Chanukah candles, which also have a blessing of a Torah-like command. And each one, you're entitled to ask the question, where do we get that God commanded us? They are Megillah, the reading of Megillat Esther, for example, Netilat Yodayim, the ritual washing of the hands in the morning and before meals, pardon my hesitation, the reciting of Hallel, which we do on each of the mornings of Chanukah and several other times during the year. Rabbinic command, which we say, Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, God who has sanctified us with his mitzvot and commanded us, whatever. Eruv, there are three types of Eruv, let's not get into that now. So let's see if we've got it. Eruv and Hallel and Netilat Yadayim, Ner Shabbat, Shabbos candles, which also go along with Yom Tov candles, and Chanukah candles, which are different, and the sixth out of the seven rabbinic mitzvot is Megillah. So that covers them. The seventh one, by the way, is making brachot. Except for Birkat HaMazon, all the other brachot are rabbinic in origin, but we don't have a bracha of a mitzvah for a bracha, because then we would have to have a bracha for the bracha of the bracha, and a bracha for the bracha of the bracha of the bracha. You get the point, I hope. The answer to all of the above is Devarim 17:11, Deuteronomy 17:11, where the Torah, God in the Torah, commands al pi haTorah asher yorucha, according to the teachings which they shall instruct you, va'al haMishpat asher yomeru lecha, and by the judgments which they shall render, ta'aseh, you shall do. Lo tasur min hadavar asher yagidu lecha, do not veer from what they tell you, yamin usmol, neither to the right nor to the left. This verse is the command in the Torah, in both a positive command as well as a prohibition, to listen to the decrees of Sanhedrin, the supreme halachic ruling body. And when the Sanhedrin says that each year on the 14th or 15th of Adar, you shall read Megillat Esther, then we read it. And not only do we read it, but we make a blessing before it, and that blessing is blessing God, who has commanded us to read the Megillah. In the case of Megillah, it is via the halachic rulings of the Sanhedrin. So too with Chanukah, so too with Shabbat candles, so too with Netilat Yadayim, and the others that I mentioned before. So that is basically what we say. It gives a very strong status for rabbinic commands, and as it should, because there is no such thing as a rabbinic command that does not have the authority of the Torah for the rabbis to render it. In fact, because the Torah gives the authority to the rabbis to render halachic decisions which are binding on us, the question is, what about the prohibition of adding to the Torah, which you're not allowed to do? Isn't this adding to the Torah? No, this is fulfilling the concept of the Torah and the charge of the Torah to the Sanhedrin to do these legislations. But the sages were very, very cautious in making sure that this does not even appear to be adding to the Torah, because that would be problematic. So is Chanukah candles biblical? No, it's post-biblical. It's rabbinic. Does it carry with it the heavy bracha of a mitzvah? Yes, it does, by the authority that the Torah gives our sages. The second blessing for each night of Chanukah is Sha'asa Nisim La'avotenu Bayamim Ha'em Bezman Hazeh, praising God for performing miracles for our ancestors at this time. And then, on the first opportunity, we have the Shachianu, which was the words of the song that you recently heard. I can't say any more that you just heard, but a while ago. And the Shachianu is said many, many different occasions throughout the year. It is said on each of the holidays, for the holiday itself. It is said on many once-a-year mitzvot, or every so often mitzvot which we perform in Israel. It is said at a Brit Milah. Usually in Chutz Laretz it is not said. It is said on Pidyon HaBen, all over. It is said when you eat a fruit for the first time in a season. It is said on various other occasions, the common denominator to them all, the point of that blessing, is to turn to God and say, God, thank you that I am alive to see and to be here at this time. Hanukkah is an exciting holiday. Lighting of the Chanukiah is an exciting performance of a mitzvah, and or it should be. And the Jew reacts by not only properly making blessings, but on that first of the year experience, the first night of Chanukah, he says, I thank you, God, Shehechiyanu, that you have kept me alive, V'kiyamanu, and sustained me, upheld me, V'higiyanu, and that I have reached this time. It is a milestone on the journey of life. We have many such milestones, and that is the significance of the bracha of Shehechiyanu. Okay, next point. And this is difficult to discuss in a very short period of time, but I'll force myself. I have this drive in me to make this point, even if it's been made before, and even if, for those who it hasn't been made, they might not want to hear it. Judaism is made up of concepts and nitty-gritty detail. A lot of Jews are very satisfied with the broad concepts and, in essence, say, don't bother me with the details. Do you think it makes a difference if I do it this way or that way? And the answer to those Jews is, yes, it does make a difference, but it's a difficult thing to get across. The concepts, for some people, are what they want to hear, what they're willing to read about, what they're willing to discuss, and what they're willing to value. The little detail, which sometimes is very picayune, is something that some Jews would like to do away with, and they must not. And they must learn to understand and appreciate the value of the little details. They are as part of Judaism as the broad concepts themselves. There are other Jews who are so involved in the nitty-gritty detail that they can't take a step back, or they don't take a step back and see the picture, the conceptual idea behind the nitty-gritty detail. The Hanukkah candles, there's a lot to say about the concept, the festival of Hanukkah, the meaning of Hanukkah, but there's also need to pay attention to the details. What do you light with? I'll give you just a simple example, which is an easy one because we've already asked and answered it. But when they first came out, they were controversial. If the lighting of the menorah, lighting of the Chanukiah, commemorates the lighting of the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash, which was olive oil and a wick and a flame, then we take olive oil and a wick and a flame and commemorate it. What about wax candles? What do you mean, what about wax candles? Who doesn't know that you can buy a box of 44 candles, multicolored, beautiful designs, shorter ones, longer ones, all kind of things, and that's enough for each of the nights of Chanukah. And in the old days, the box used to have the sheet music for Ma'oz Tzur on it, and sometimes the box was stuffed with an envelope for the Cleveland Jewish orphanage looking for a donation. Who doesn't know about candles? So what do you mean, what about candles? What about candles? The question was asked, do wax candles satisfy the commemorative requirement of the lighting of Hanukkah candles? There's an argument to say oil only. The Maharal of Prague made that point. He felt that wax or tallow does not foot the bill, does not fit the requirements. He was overruled by a majority of authorities who say that wax melts when you put a flame at its tip, forms a pool of a liquid fuel like oil, which is soaked up in a wick and burns cleanly at the tip of the wick. That is sufficient, or more than sufficient, that is satisfactory for the mitzvah of lighting. This is a question that was asked and answered before our time, before our lifetime, and therefore we were born into a world of Hanukkah candles, put them in the freezer for a longer life and less dripping. That's a helpful hint. And oil seems to be preferable, although people who have difficulty with oil should feel comfortable using wax candles. But each question has to be asked. Can I have a homemade device that has 8 gas jets, attach it to a canister of methane or butane, and turn the valve, spark, there's a flame, turn the valve, spark, there's a flame, and light candles that way? The answer is no, you can't. Why not? Not a liquid fuel soaked up by a wick and burning nicely at the tip of the wick. Is that required? It seems that it is. These are little details. Electric lights is another question. Very, very popular in some communities to have an electric Chanukiah. The vast majority of halachic authorities do not sanction the use of an electric Chanukiah for various reasons, which I can't go into now, or I don't have the time to go into now. But it's a question that's asked. What's the proper place to put the Chanukiah? In the olden times, it was outdoors, protected by glass if necessary. Then, for many, many years of exile all over the world, the mitzvah moved indoors, sometimes at the window and sometimes in the middle of your home with the shades closed. Now, back in Israel, very, very popular to light outdoors again at your doorway. What time do you light? What's the earliest possible time? The best possible time? The second best, third best, deadline, latest you could light? How long do you have to light? What do you do if you're going to visit somebody at candle lighting time and you're not going to be back until 11 o'clock? What do you do on Friday when you have Shabbat coming in and Shabbat candles to light and Hanukkah candles? What do you do on Motzoi Shabbat when you have Shabbat leaving and Havdalah to make and candles to light? I'd love to discuss all of these things. But at least people should hear that there are a myriad of different situations that each one asks the question, to which you should never say, oh, what difference does it make? Just do it. No, because nitty-gritty details keep mitzvot alive. Sometimes they symbolize an important idea or a concept. As usual, maybe even more so, many, many more things I would love to say. Not enough time to say it. Hopefully we'll have other opportunities. This Shabbat, Shabbat Chanukah, we also announce the coming Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh Tevet this year is 2 days, because Kislev has 30 days. That will be on Tuesday and Wednesday, the 6th and 7th day of Chanukah. And on that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Chanukah Sameach, and Chodesh Tov. Lehishtameah.